It's World Press Freedom Day, and today, here in my constituency in Islington at the Fourth Monkey Theatre School, I'm talking to Stella Assange about the situation facing Julian. Stella, what's happening with the case coming up next?
Well, we're at a critical juncture, and Julian's case has gone on for 5 years now. He's been in Belmarsh that entire time. But now he's just one decision away from extradition. And there was a hearing back in February 20th, and there has been a provisional decision to allow an appeal, but that can be reversed on May 20th. So if the judges rule against Julian on May 20th, then that's the end of the road for him. And so we're going to have a protest outside court on May the 20th. We're asking people to show up from around 8:30, 8 o'clock if they want to be there a bit earlier, and to show the enormous support that Julian has and how the public has come around to really understand what's at stake and that Julian is being persecuted because he published the truth about war crimes committed in our name.
I'll be there on the 20th, and I'm hoping there's going to be thousands more people there, and it's very important. There is a big turnout. So that anyone watching this who is unaware of the situation facing Julian, can you give us a summary? So I know there's tens of thousands of pages he published, a summary of the crucial pieces of information that Julian was able to reveal to the public.
Well, the important thing to understand about Julian is that he is a journalist and a publisher. He received information from a source, Chelsea Manning, who was a US military insider, and she had access as an military intelligence officer to a lot of documentation that revealed assassination squads, torture, war crimes, and the true death toll of civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan. And as an act of conscience, she blew the whistle, and she sent this information. Initially, she tried to the New York Times and Washington Post. They didn't want to publish it. And then she sent it to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks published it and made the greatest act of revolutionary journalism the world has ever seen, documenting wars in the Middle East in a way, in such high resolution that it had never been done that way in journalism. It was just right at the beginning of when data journalism started becoming a thing. So this was published in 2010. And then the Obama administration at the time, because these were US military documents, although they revealed crimes all over the world, and including in black sites, and Guantanamo Bay, and also things like political interference in judicial processes in allied states like the UK, Germany, Spain, Italy, investigations into CIA renditions and torture and so on, which the US then intervened through their diplomatic missions, through their embassies, to stop the legal process in Europe, to bring those people to account because they were US military officers and intelligence officers. And so there was impunity around all this highly illegal activity. And so what WikiLeaks did, what Julian did through these publications, was to put into the public record evidence of state criminality. And the Obama administration reached the conclusion that this was journalism, in other words. What they concluded was that there was no way to go after Julian and WikiLeaks, which didn't also criminalize what the press does every day. And when Julian's case is talked about, it's always put in the context of secrecy and state secrecy and confidential documents and so on. But there are two things that are important to understand, which is that states commit crimes, and when they commit crimes, they usually cover them up, and they cover them up through stamping a secret label on the evidence. And so journalists and the press, as a way of revealing those war crimes, have to be able to publish the truth and not be persecuted over it. And the second thing to understand is that all newspapers, all news broadcasts, every single day reveal confidential information. Otherwise, all you have is basically a government mouthpiece. We need information to be able to be shared with the public when it's in the public interest and when it's true. That has to be a sacred protection. And with Julian's case, to answer your question, Julian's case is the first case in which the truth is being criminalized and a journalist is being put in prison because he published evidence of government wrongdoing. And in this case, it was the US government, and the US government has taken revenge by prosecuting him in a way that has never been done before for publishing the truth. He showed the public that journalism could be done differently, that it could be more democratic, because Julian's model of journalism is what he calls scientific journalism. So he thought it was important for the public to be treated as intelligent individuals who can reach their own conclusions. And so he thought, yes, we should publish analysis, which WikiLeaks actually does. Julian has written hundreds of articles about the underlying material. But analysis should come with the underlying material. And in that way, members of the public who are historians, academics, scientists, whatever, can look at that data on their own and either agree with the analysis or improve it or refute it. And so this was a real challenge to the gatekeeping function that the mainstream media considers it plays.
And the way in which in a war situation such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, all of them, the military have embedded journalists who put on the uniform with a label saying they're press, and they then report what they're told to report, basically.
I think the Iraq war was very instructive in understanding how the media worked. The journalists who encouraged, who backed the Iraq invasion, usually progressed in their careers much faster. They moved up the echelons of management, of editorial echelons inside newspapers and so on. And the ones who challenged the war usually didn't. And it's similar with embedded journalists in Iraq and so on. They become cozy with the authorities, and it's a real problem for aspiring journalists, I think, because the ones who have a troubled conscience about this, they leave journalism. Or, I mean, I know lots of good journalists who have just done a career change in their mid-30s because they can't take it anymore. And of course, I think that the media landscape has changed over time, and now it's easier to be an independent journalist, and the public understands and is hungry for independent journalism. But Julian's case, it doesn't just threaten individuals who are on the margins or who are working, you know, outside of an institutional setting. It is an attack on the whole fundamentals of journalism. precisely because he is being prosecuted for publishing the truth. And that's why, in spite of their differences and their attacks on his character and all that, the mainstream media organizations like the New York Times and the Guardian and so on have said that this case is an attack on press freedom globally, because it allows authorities to go after them as well, because there's no difference between what he's done, which is publish the truth, and what they do.
Isn't the use of the Espionage Act against Julian something incredibly unusual, in that he is being accused of a terrible crime which has massive implications? Who made the decision about using the Espionage Act against him? Because it was the same act used against Daniel Ellsberg, wasn't it?
It's the first time that the Espionage Act, the US Espionage Act, is used against a publisher. Now, this is a piece of legislation that came about in the middle of the First World War. It's very broadly worded, but it's the first time it's used against a publisher in a news context. So he's not accused of espionage per se. There's no allegation that he was acting on behalf of another power or anything like that. The accusation is that he received information from Chelsea Manning and he published it. And so they've used this piece of legislation in order to be able to use it against the rest of the press. That seems pretty clear. Now, in order to understand who made the decision and why, I think you have to look at how it came about. It came about in 2017, 2018. That's when the decision to prosecute Julian actually was formalized. And that was during the Trump administration. And Mike Pompeo, who was the head of the CIA, was in the middle of a deranged, obsessive quest to bring down Julian and WikiLeaks, because WikiLeaks had published documents exposing the CIA, and Mike Pompeo was the head of the CIA. And during this time, he had even asked the CIA to come up with plans to kidnap or assassinate Julian. And in his book, Mike Pompeo wrote a book, he takes credit for Julian's prosecution. He says that he was behind the scenes encouraging, instigating the Trump administration to go after Julian. And even we now know making plans to kill him. Meanwhile, the Trump administration had a really antagonistic relationship with the press. There were lots of leaks from the Trump administration, and Trump even called the press the enemy of the people. And so it was easy, it seems, to convince him that it was a good idea to prosecute Julian or to kidnap or kill him, because they wanted to set an example for the rest of the press. And the Biden administration, when it came in, should have dropped this on day one, because it completely changes the relationship between the public and the government when you can go after the press, whose function it is to keep the public and so the electorate informed of wrongdoing by those in power. When you change that relationship, then you change completely the nature of the relationship between the public and government.
And Julian has now been 5 years in Belmarsh, and before that he was in the Ecuadorian embassy. He hasn't known any kind of real freedom for many years now. How's he coping?
Well, Julian has been in Belmarsh now for over 5 years, and it's nearing the same amount of time in Belmarsh as he spent in the Ecuadorian embassy. I mean, that was almost 7 years. Now he's over 5 years inside Belmarsh. Altogether, he hasn't been a free man since the 7th of December 2010, which was when he was initially arrested. And that was 7 days after WikiLeaks started publishing the diplomatic cables. It's a huge strain on Julian mentally, physically. Obviously, this has taken a huge toll on him as well. He's in Belmarsh in a single cell. It's a small cell, you know, it's isolating, it's conditions under which he can't stay healthy. So what you have is a deterioration over time, because these things accumulate. And imagine he was there the whole period of the COVID lockdown, which was, you know, infinitely worse than the lockdown that everyone experienced. Because he was in a cell, sometimes there was an outbreak in the house block, and then he was stuck in the cell for days on end without being able to exit, even to go to the yard or anything like that. And he's also experienced loss while he's been there. Friends have died through two of them through suicide. And also he's lost close friends like John Pilger and Vivian Westwood. And these were people who were so important to him and to the struggle to free him. So he's under enormous strain, and he's having to carry this, not just under difficult physical conditions, but just the isolation of dealing with, you know, grief and loss, and the amount of time he's been in there. It's impossible for any one of us to understand. I mean, I understand it more because I speak to him and I see him and so on, but I'm really, I feel powerless to really support him, because I can't be there physically for him. I can only speak to him over the phone. I see him once or twice a week for an hour and a half at a time. And over time, this takes a huge, huge toll on him.
Now, before we finish, just a question, really, in my mind, and I'm sure it's in yours. If Julian wins on the 20th, wonderful. If he doesn't, what's the effect on all of us and journalism all around the world?
Look, the attack on Julian is an attack on him as a person. It's an attack on the press, because it sets a precedent, a legal precedent, to go after the rest of the press. But ultimately, the real target is the public, because if you harass and persecute the journalist and the press, then they're not going to be willing to publish with courage and to publish the hardest truths. And so the most important things for the public to know will never reach the light of day. So the true target is the public and an informed public. The goal is to keep the public ignorant. When they're attacking Julian, they're really attacking the ability of the public to learn the truth.
Somebody watching this today who's heard the very powerful message you've just given and the case coming up on the 20th, what can they do on Press Freedom Day and going forward?
On Press Freedom Day, which is the 3rd of May today, to call for Julian's freedom, on social media to talk about Julian. Julian is the most awarded journalist in history, and I say this with conviction, because I challenge anyone to show me another journalist who has won 40 plus awards for his work, including the highest.
The jealousy of the editors must be huge on that.
It's enormous. He's won the Australian version of the Pulitzer Prize, the Walkley Award, for most important contribution to journalism. Over 20 journalist unions in Europe have given him membership as an act of solidarity. And he's won, you know, as I say, dozens and dozens of journalism awards. He is the most important journalist alive, and he has been in a prison cell in London for over 5 years. That is a fact. And so it's really important to put Julian, always talk about Julian on World Press Freedom Day, and call out Western governments who talk about press freedom and are actually persecuting the most important journalist in the world and making journalists all over the world more at risk of imprisonment and harassment because they're setting the standard that this is what you do. You put journalists in prison for publishing the truth that embarrass governments. And then on the 20th, it's really important for people to come to the Royal Courts of Justice in the morning. We're going to start arriving around 8:30, and there will be a big protest and there will be speeches, and I hope you can be there. We don't know what will happen that day, but it could be very, very well be that there will be a decision that same day. And so Julian needs the press that will be there to see that he has enormous support and that the public will not stand by and let this happen. And stay engaged. StellaAssange.com, that's my website, and I have other ways to be active and engaged, and obviously just follow and stay tuned and talk to friends and family about Julian and bring them along on the 20th.
Today, World Press Freedom Day. Get your social media messages out. Tell all your friends, tell your neighbours, tell your MP, tell anybody of the plight of Julian, because his plight is our plight. His plight in fighting for his justice is our plight in being able to know the truth about what is done to people around the world. What happened in Iraq, Afghanistan, what happened in Syria and Libya, the corporate crimes around the world, all exposed by the information that Chelsea Manning produced and Julian published. We are here to defend Julian Assange. So the next thing is, put in your diaries, the 20th of May, 8:30 in the morning. If you can, please come to the Royal Courts of Justice in London. If you can't get there, make some noise locally, make some noise on social media. We can all do something. Let us not be silent bystanders while a brilliant journalist, an innocent man, is under such terrible threat from the power of the US government and, if I may say so, the complicity of the British and other governments with that. I want to say thank you, Stella, for coming on today and what you've said, and our solidarity and support to Julian.
Thanks, Jeremy.